Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGabinower, and welcome to episode 57 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. Do you want to build your own custom software to help systematize your entire business? In this interview, my guest reveals the steps he took to build proprietary software to systematize his entire business and eliminate the loss of crucial client data because he couldn't find any off-the-shelf software that was the right fit for systematizing his type of business. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document step-by-step how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know? Well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Steve Byers, and he is the CEO of Energy Logic Inc. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Owen. I'm really happy to be here.
So, the goal of this interview is to talk about how you systematize your business so it runs successfully without you. And we're going to walk the listener through kind of the story behind how you exactly did that. But before we even jump right in, I want to find out, share some mind-blowing results that you currently now experience as a result of, going through that process of systematizing and automating your business.
Sure. Well, just to give you a little background, we deal with tons and tons of data because we do testing on homes for home builders primarily and homeowners as well. But most of it, the focus of the business is on home builders. So we go into a home, we do inspections, got hundreds of data points per home. So in order to do that, we have to deal with all that data. And without a system, we were finding that we were, not able to deal with the data. We're losing data. We're disappointing clients occasionally, things like that. So now where we have gotten to now is we never lose data because it's a cloud-based system. We are able to be highly efficient. So, roughly speaking, we would have to have about 10% more staff to deal, and that's just office staff, to deal with the amount of work we have if we didn't have the systems that we have in place now. And I don't even know exactly what the number of additional field staff we'd have to have, probably a commensurate number. So it's a lot. It's a much, that gives us a much better shot at being profitable because we can keep the headcount down and not kill people at the same time, with too much work. And that's really important to our culture.
Also, I think during the pre-interview, you mentioned how, now, based on the system you have, a client can just call you and ask for a report, and within 25 seconds, you just go into your system, press the button, and it goes up. And before, you would probably have to get a team of people just to pull that data out.
Exactly. And, yeah, that was one of the first, for that moment when a client called and I wasn't in a place where I could – I was out of the city. I was at a conference, and I was able to immediately get in, get the data they needed, get to them, get the report they needed. And that was an incredibly good feeling, because when that first time happens like that, you, as an entrepreneur, you feel that it's like the doors open up in front of you. You can see there's a way into the future instead of dragging all this baggage behind you that is going to make it nearly impossible for you to get where you want to be.
Yeah. And so how would you say your company has transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
Probably the biggest thing would be that we are able to focus not on the minutiae of managing paper and managing the data itself. We have the systems in place to do that. And not just data. I keep saying data. When I say data, I mean schedules, client names and phone numbers, the files themselves, all those pieces. And when you know that that is handled by the system that you've got, that lets your people focus on what is really important, right? Customer service, getting the job itself done correctly. And with the work that we do is very quality, it's a function of quality. We're doing quality assurance, even if it's in the context of energy efficiency, but we're doing quality assurance. So our people can focus on seeing what's there in front of them and not worrying about, did I lose a piece of paper? Did that get written down? Because the whole system guides them through the process and makes sure that they don't forget things, letting them focus on the big picture, the important things.
And how would you say your personal life has transformed as a result of systematizing your business?
Well, let me put it this way. If we didn't have the systems that we have in place, I would not have a personal life. I wouldn't have a personal life, or the company would have stalled out, several years ago, because there's simply no way it could have grown to the size it is now if we hadn't done what we've done.
Yeah, we were asking you during the pre-interview, say, basically, since you have the systems in place, and it basically runs without you, what would you say was the longest time you've been away from the business? So what would mm-hmm. have been the longest time you've been away from the business?
So it had been a 6-week trip out of the country. We were going to China. My wife's a cultural anthropologist, in addition to being part of the company. And she was working with some students there, some American college students. And so we were able to go. I was able to basically forget entirely about operational things. I was working on something, but it was a project basis. And that was I didn't have to, but I could. And I didn't have to worry at all about operations. Now, of course, in the big picture, systems is not just a web system like we built to handle our schedule and our data, the concrete things. A system is also, of course, the people that you have. And I've got really great people working with us to make sure that things run smoothly.
Okay. And so let's give the listeners some more context as to what you guys do. So what exactly does your company do? And, what big pain do you really solve for your customers?
Mm-hmm. So the core of our company, we do a variety of things, but the core of the company is working with major home builders to help them build more energy efficient homes. And the problem that we're solving for them, in essence, is that they're home builders. So they know how to build homes. They're very focused on that. So they're in home builders. You talk about process home builders, good home builders, successful home builders are very process oriented.
Yeah.
But what they see is the house. They don't necessarily see the details and the quality assurance pieces, especially around energy efficiency and durability and safety that we see. That's what we're trained to see. That's the pain and suffering part that we do. And we help them demonstrate to the buyers, the home buyer, how energy efficient the home is, and gives a context and a comparison for the home they're building versus other homes.
Yeah. And so how many full-time employees do you have?
We have about 30, 32 full-time employees and 10 part-time employees.
Yeah. And, one of the questions that my listener was wanting to know is in terms of, revenue and profit, what we say, is the company profitable, and probably what was last year's annual revenue, and what probably we expect to generate this year?
Right. The company is profitable. We did about $3.5 million gross last year. We'll do about the same this year because we've had some changes in the market that are outside of our control. It's just there's things that the utility companies do that changes the game for us year to year. And this year they're changing the game in a way that's not so great for us, but that's okay. We'll come out of that just fine on the other end.
Congratulations so far on what you've been doing so far. That's great to know. And so, let's go back to before the point where the business now is where it is, where it's systematized and can run without you. Let's take us back to when it was not at that point. And at that mm-hmm. time, what was wrong with it? What even went wrong?
Well, the biggest thing was losing information. So there's nothing there's nothing more painful for our business, and I think this would apply to lots of different businesses. We're a service industry. There's nothing more painful than going out, doing the job, and then losing the results of the job, losing literally the piece of paper that you recorded the data on.
Yeah.
Because then you've got to go back and redo the whole job. Well, that's not very good for profitability, right? So, so that's one of the most painful things. And even if you didn't just straight out lose it, that's the most painful thing. But the inability to respond quickly to a client and their needs, whether it be for data, for addressing the schedule of work to be done, when things will be done, without the system, then you can do a little bit. You can do a little bit of work and keep it all in your head. And I think this is true. I hear it over and over from different people, even in different industries. You're able to keep so much in your head as a solopreneur or an entrepreneur with a couple of people, And they're just, you reach that point, you hit that wall where you can't keep it in your head anymore. And that's usually the moment, you know, the epiphany, like, I have to do something.
You also mentioned something about closing down your office and moving to another one. How did that, you know, kind of, was it, how was that an issue at that point too?
Oh, well, that was just a story I was telling that was related to, we're just moving offices into different spaces. It wasn't really closing down one, but simply because we had a better place to move to. But what was interesting about that when we were talking prior was that I'm going through all these files. You got to move out of an office you've been in for 10 years. You accumulate a lot of stuff. Yeah. So we have boxes and boxes and boxes of paper files from the day when we were all paper. And I'm there just saying, okay, recycle this and shred this, et cetera. So I start, when I open up a box, I'm going through and it's like, wow, it's sort of amazing to me. I pick up a file, a piece of paper from, you know, 2003. So, wow, this is how we used to do our work. You know, before we had all the databases, before we had systems, before we had processes. And then I decided to grab, just go into various boxes and grab sort of an evolution of paperwork before the system. Now there's no paper. And so many of my staff have never seen how we used to do our work. So I kind of grabbed a little history museum out of the paper so I could show people. Yeah.
Based on that, it's like, it sounds like it's based on what you guys do. It's very, at that time before you build that automation and systems behind what you do now, it was very, you know, paper intensive, you know, collection of data for the work you had to do, and paper was everywhere. And so I can actually see how that could have been an issue. And okay. So did you want to say something else before we?
No, you're absolutely right. And there's just only so much, and it's not just paper, but you know, I, for example, have, let's say poor handwriting. So, you know, if you've got to translate that. And so the potential, one thing that systematization did as well was to dramatically reduce transcription errors. So somebody trying to read my writing and input it, or even myself trying to read my own writing and put it into a system.
Sometimes I cannot even read my own writing. I understand. So, okay. So at that point, now, you know, we're going back to that point where they were, you know, you mentioned some of the issues at that point. So what would you say at that very point, can you remember, was the lowest point, and describe how bad it got?
Okay. So I would say the lowest point was where I was at this point where I was trying to do more high level work. Some design work for a client. And it was something that I needed to really focus my best effort on. But because we didn't have the systems in place during the day, I was still having to do all the daily operation stuff with this old, bad, chaotic system. So that drove me to doing this complicated, difficult work at night, late at night.
And I remember, willpower is not even there anymore.
the brain power is not even, you know, there either. And I just remember that being the lowest, darkest point where I wasn't able to give the best, you know, use my best self on the work that demanded the most because I had all this other stuff going on.
But do you remember, I mean, given that you just said that, you know, do you remember a specific, you know, point when you felt like this was your breaking point that, you know, hey, it's either I'm going to change things around or, you know, are we going home? You know, do you remember that breaking point? And if so, share that story of the breaking point if you do remember it. What happened?
I really think that what I was describing was that breaking point where, you know, literally I'm up until 3 a.m. and just saying, this can't go on this way. I can't do this other work. I can't do this work that's important to the company.
Yeah.
So we've got to change that. If we're going to get bigger and better and grow, we've got to build in better systems so that we can tackle bigger, better things.
Yeah. So now let's talk about, you know, what was the very first step you took to solve the problems you've mentioned that, you know, you experienced at the lowest point in the business?
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, if you can imagine, we had this giant, you know, file system with, and we had a whole folder labeled AWOL ratings, you know, absent without leave ratings. That came out of the military, so it's where the name came from. And that's stuff that we just simply had lost and couldn't find. And so we started from that point, realizing that we needed to build a system. So we, like lots of companies, we started.
Oh, so you lost a? Did you say you lost a folder that had information in it? Was that what you're saying? I didn't get that part.
Oh, sorry. Let me rephrase it. We had a folder that had files that had missing information. Mm-hmm. And so they're incomplete. If they're incomplete, we can't finish the job. If we can't finish the job, then we can't get paid for the job.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we started then, like a lot of, I think a lot of companies do, where we started building an Excel spread, building Excel spreadsheets. And then we went to building something in Microsoft Access. And, you know, those are all fine for what they are, but they're no way to really grow a company. And then as we went through the process of finding the limitations of Excel, finding the limitations of Microsoft Access, we realized that we needed to bring in somebody who could really help. And so we hired a developer who still works with us. He's a third-party developer, but it's been a 10-year-long relationship now. And we started designing the system based on our work in the field. So we still do the architecture of the system. How should it look? And how, what is the process? How's the workflow need to go? And all those things. And then he takes what we say we need and he builds the back end, you know, the databases, all in the cloud now. And that was one of the sort of fortuitous decisions that we made, was instead of making it a server-based system, because this is, you know, this is 2005. You know, we really, the cloud was in some ways kind of early days for the cloud, if you will.
Yeah.
But we decided that's where we needed to go, because we had people all over, you know, Colorado trying to do work, and to think that they're going to be able to get to a server all the time was, you know, not true. So this was one of those really happy decisions we made to go to the cloud. And then, you know, it's just been an evolutionary process from there of building more and more robust systems, sometimes simplifying them. You know, a lot of processes and systems, as you well know, mm-hmm. have a way of getting complicated, more and more complicated. And then sometimes you've got to corral that all back. You know, so that's a lot of what we've done.
So let me see if I can break that down a little bit more. So the very first thing you said you did was you built kind of like a Excel database mm-hmm. spreadsheet that had all the data. What was the you said something about a billing person, about your wife, I think, probably yes. helping you at that point too. What did she do at that point when you guys were working with the Excel data? I'm
curious. Yeah, so she was running all the bookkeeping for the company, and because of my bad management of data and records, she was often chasing around trying to find all these missing pieces of data. And again, that okay. makes it really hard to get paid. So she ended up taking over the architecture, you know, doing the architecting of the system. She's a very intelligent woman and is able to take that over and do that in a really fantastic way and develop this really great working relationship with the developer.
Okay. And so at that point, after getting all the what you needed to, you know, get into the actual software itself, was it from the Excel you guys now moved to an Access database, and from then you now moved into trying to do something on the cloud? I'm just trying to understand the transition of what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. So it went from spreadsheets to Access, and then from Access into the cloud.
Okay. And Access exactly. being it's something that sits on your server, and yes. then cloud being something that it's not necessarily in a server where someone has to be, you know, maybe an H drive or something located in the office,
right.
but it's something where anywhere in the world they can get access to.
Exactly. Okay.
And so after that, what was the second step you guys took to kind of, you know, solve this problem?
Well, interesting. At that point, I'd say, I don't know if it was second step or something that just
in some
yeah. And so, well, it's never ends. That's one thing to mention.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get there. I mean, it's a continuous evolution. We're always improving the system. But one thing that happened that changed how we ran the business, in essence, is that this is a very small industry, and there was no system. One of the reasons we were having to build our own system was that there was no off-the-shelf system for us to buy. So, you know, for a big industry like, say, heating and cooling or the home building, there are, you know, there are dozens of different competing systems to run
IT,
companies.
Yeah, they probably
right.
have a lot. Yeah.
And so, you know, for us, there was no such thing. That's one reason we had to build our own. So once we had built it and we showed it to, you know, colleagues and friends in the industry, people really liked it and wanted to buy it. So we ended up, you know, selling it as a subscription service to other companies. And so that, you know, that changes things, of course. When you're building something only for yourself, you have a certain perspective. And then when you're building it and selling it to other people, your perspective on what's important and what you need to do changes. And
how?
So that's, well, because we have to take not, you know, just our perspective in running a company in Colorado had to change. We had to think about, what's it mean to be doing this work in any part of the company in a country for different types of clients, and what are the different needs people have, and are they going to use the system the same way that we do, and what is it, what do we have to do in terms of training people to use the system? So it's a feedback loop too, because we learn in how to help people that were, that are our clients for the system, we learn better how to build the system. And it's been, that's been an interesting thing for us, is that, and a good thing for our clients, is that we almost never have a bug come back to us or a problem come back to us from our client base, because everything that they ever see, we test it internally on our own people for a while. So it's very, very rare for us to have a problem like that.
When you say your own people, you mean the other colleagues who are in the same industry who wanted access to the software too? That's what you
right.
mean?
Well, so I mean, our own people is our own staff. So when we have a new release or a new feature that we build into the software, Energy Logic runs it internally for a certain amount of time to make sure that it's good to go. Then it goes outside. So it's not just a beta test. It's a real world test internally before our clients that would subscribe to the system ever see it.
Oh, okay. And so is this software that you guys build internally, is it the one you call Dash? Or
Yes. That's okay. It.
And this is probably taking you away from the flow of what we're going to talk about. But I'm like, you are a service business, and then now you build your software to run your service business, and then you have people outside who are, you know, in the same industry saying they want access, and then you're giving them access. That now makes you kind of a software SaaS business. I'm like, how dealing with that dynamics? How did that work?
Well, it's a good question, and for a long time we struggled internally with the idea that were we a software company. You know, should we say that we're a software company? And you know, eventually we said, yes, we are. You know, we're a software company and we're a service company. And those things work nicely together because of what I just said. We get to try things out on ourselves before clients ever see it. And it also puts us in a leadership position in the industry because we've been able to do things and think. We're forced to think about, where is the industry going? What's the future of the industry? To keep our software relevant. So we've got to stay ahead of the curve. And that's good for any business. I mean, is it challenging? Yes, it's challenging for sure. Because, you know, well, one of the things that business consultants that I've worked with over the past many years have said is that we're too diversified. And I understand that critique. However, it's been a very good thing for us ultimately that we've been so diversified and able to do these different things.
And let's break that down a little bit more. Is it that diversified in terms of, on one hand, you're doing service, and on the other hand, you're also providing software, or diversified in the sense of the solution you're providing to customers are kind of a lot? I'm just wanting to understand what they meant by that.
Well, actually, we're diversified in a couple of different ways. Yes, exactly what you said. So we're diversified in that we're a service company and we sell software, but we're also diversified inside the rest with our client base, because they all do different things. So we're in turn having to meet their different needs. And the rest of the companies, we're even more diversified than that, because we also do training and consulting as a different additional services that we offer as well. So, yes, we're diversified on just about every front you can think of.
The vertical, horizontal, everywhere.
Yeah, 360.
And so we're still talking about kind of like the solutions that you came up with, you know, during the law sprint. So what other steps do you remember that you took to kind of solve the problems that you guys were experiencing at the lowest point in the business?
Well, one thing we did was we looked at what the deliverable was. So we started at the end, in essence, if you will. What do we need to deliver to our clients?
Results. Okay.
Yes. You know, so that was an important thing for us to do. Because ultimately, you know, if we're designing systems that don't help us deliver what the client needs, then we're not going to get, you know, we're not going to be able to do good work for them. So we started there. What is it they need? So they need speed and they need accuracy from us. So we do our inspections. They need them to happen on schedule. They need to happen, and then they need to get the results quickly. So we designed a system that started with those assumptions and went back from there. So we also, again, I think I mentioned it, but we had to design the system to conform with the workflow of the people in the field.
Yeah.
So it couldn't just be my wife, because she doesn't go to the field and never has. And it couldn't just be me, because I have my own particular way of doing things. And at that point, I was not really in the field anymore. I was starting to come out of the field. I was still in the field some, but I'm starting to leave the field. So we needed to make sure that we had the perspective of the people who were going to be using the tool in the field as a driving force for their part. Then that's the field part. There's also another part, which is the administrative part of the system, which is the scheduling and reporting and the things that the back office people use, and their processes and their workflows needed to be taken into account as well.
Yeah. And so I'm also curious too, like, given, you know, you're trying to build systems, there's any way you can start from, but I'm wondering, like, how did you even prioritize, you know, what steps to take? I'm trying to figure out, okay, what was the decision-making factor in saying, okay, this is where I first start working on creating this. This is the specific area I'm going to start creating a system for in my business. How did you make the decision on where to prioritize and where to start from and work your way gradually from?
So it's related. So the place we started was the ability to manage the schedule. And so less the data side of things, all the data that we're gathering, the houses, and more the interaction with the people scheduling the home. So our people talking to the builders about when jobs should get done. And the reason for that was that it's a very fluid and dynamic world, home building. So jobs move around constantly because of all the different contractors that are doing work. So maybe one contractor doesn't finish their job, then that pushes the house around on the schedule.
Yeah.
And so we needed to be able to move houses and let our people know, so that they could see it all the time, give us that. So we had to start there. So that was a priority. An interesting tension is related to what I was discussing too about, we use it internally, of course, and that's where we started. And then we have external clients. So those are two sets of competing interests in terms of prioritization. So we have our own staff who say, well, we really want these things. And then we have all the users in the subscriber base who are asking for sometimes similar things, but oftentimes different things. And we had to balance the priorities for the two. So in essence, we have an internal client, us, and external clients. And we had to balance the needs and demands.
Yeah. And so I'm also wondering, how exactly did you document your procedures and processes for the business? And if so, what tools did you even probably use too at that time?
Yeah, at that time, I'd say that we were really not very good at it. And that we were building systems and building them fast and in a lot of time cases, not documenting very well. And we're still in the process of getting better and better about that. And so it was really, we've gone from a process of just literally Word documents to document things and try to capture how we do our work and then how that's reflected in the systems we built, both internally and externally for the clients. And then we went to PDF, and then we've done videos of how to use the system. And frankly, we do a lot of live training now as well. When somebody buys the system, an external client buys a system, we really encourage them to have us come out and do a live training. We find that to be far more effective than anything we can do and document and write. And all very necessary, but there's nothing like having a live trainer, or at least, you know, being on a GoToMeeting, but live training is very effective. So then now we use a lot of different tools to both document and get to the root of process and drive projects forward. So as we talked about different tools, we use Live Minutes right now as a virtual collaboration space. One of the things that we didn't talk about before, we were talking earlier, I think, is we're one of the big things for this year is really, really driving a project management mentality into the company. Okay. And so I don't know if you've heard of Asana.
So
we're really making a transition to Asana. We use Zoho project right now. We're transitioning to Asana. We still use Zoho CRM for our own needs. But Asana is a really flexible tool, and we like it. And so we're making a big push that everything we do, I mean, literally everything, even meetings are projects in the next year.
Yeah.
So,
Go ahead. Do you have something else to say?
Yeah, no, it's just tremendously exciting. I really believe that the process of driving project management as a mindset in the company is going to be transformative.
Yeah. And at a time when you were working on creating systems and automating the business, what books or even probably mentors even had the most influence on you at that time, and why?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the very earliest, and I love business books. I'm not trained as a business person. So I've in a lot of ways had to learn on my own, do it on the job. And one of the very first books we read was The E-Myth. And that's been, gone back to that over and over again. We've worked with an E-Myth consultant. That's been really great. Good to Great, it's another fantastic book. You know, these are sort of classics. Playing to Win, another really important book for us, a little more recent. And then the Heath Brothers books. I don't know if you've read any of them, but Decisive and Made Stick and Switch. These are all, I think, really good books. And then there's a couple of periodicals that have been very important to me over the years. I read Inc. magazine, cover to cover, just like, the Bible. There's always good stuff in there. And then a little more esoteric, Harvard Business Review, which, I talked to a lot of colleagues of mine, and we're all running in smallish companies. It's sometimes hard to make the leap from what's written in something like the Harvard Business Review back to your small company. But fortunately, they write up executive summaries in the back of the magazine. So you can go there and pick things out that are relevant. Like, I don't really need to read about global supply chain management. That's not us. But there's almost always something there about HR or innovation, et cetera, that I can take stuff from that, even if it's talking about big corporations, and I can bring some gems back to our company, things that we can think about and do. So those have been very important to me.
Yeah, and it was also at that time, if we just talk about all the steps you took and we don't talk about the challenges that you actually experienced at the time we were trying to, systematize and automate the business, it will not give the conversation the full spectrum of what really happened. So what would you say were some of the biggest challenges that you actually experienced as you tried to create systems for the business at that mm-hmm. time, and how did you solve them?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we do the architecture for the system and work with the developers. So two things there, architecting software is a lot harder than we realized. Because human brains can handle all kinds of information and data and ambiguity, but computers don't. You've got to tell computers exactly what you want. They will follow. They'll do all kinds of wonderful things, but you've got to build systems that take that into account. And so building a system that works, you got to do a couple of things. You have to map out exactly who's using it, how are they using it, and what's the end product, as we talked about. And then so we were doing all that in-house. And then you've got to have somebody who's doing the coding. And so that was one of the biggest challenges for us as well, was figuring out how to work with somebody. That was probably the first time in our company that we really worked so intensely with somebody who was outside the company, who was a contractor for us. And so that was a big challenge as well. So those are the biggest challenges. And there's always, of course, resource challenges. Especially at that time, we're not a very big company, and how you spend your money and what you emphasize and prioritize in the design of the system, you've got to make, sometimes hard choices.
You said something during the pre-interview about schedulers, designing schedule model. What is that?
Yeah, so we are dealing with a lot of jobs on a given day. And as we were talking about earlier, these jobs move around every day. So we've got people from our clients calling and saying, that house isn't ready, or this house is ready now. It was supposed to be ready tomorrow. It's ready today. And so we have a wonderful staff of schedulers who are constantly adjusting the schedule. And that's a really complicated thing to do, too. That's also, of course, tied, as you might imagine, to the billing. So when a job becomes complete, the billing staff need to know that that's happened. So it's all very interwoven. The scheduling, the field work, and then ultimately the billing is all intimately related. And those things have to keep up with each other in the system. Not just the software system, but all the other systems and the people. So the more you can build a system that makes everybody, keeps everybody on the same sheet of music, knowing what's current, nothing in people's heads. That's the key, of course, right? If somebody's keeping information in their head or on a piece of paper, then it's not accessible to somebody else.
Yeah. Another thing you mentioned also is about the fact that the nature of the industry is rapidly changing, and, Talk about it.
So in dealing in home building, there's a number of different things that are changing all the time. the way that the home builders build their homes has been changing consistently. We're working with the energy codes that the cities and the counties and the states put out. So that's another thing that changes all the time. And because of the nature of the work we do, which is quality assurance and making sure that homes comply with energy codes, and then telling the builder and the home buyer how the home will perform from an energy perspective, that's changing constantly. So our systems have to be able to be changed when there's a change. When there's a change to the building code, we also work with programs. A lot of the work we do is with Energy Star, programs like that. Mm-hmm. Those programs change all the time. So we have to be able to change our program when other people change. So we have to be very flexible in design.
So basically, you had to build the software, that Dash, the system you guys have, so that, you know, when new changes come, you could easily remove a module and add this new change, and everything reflects on the system. That's kind of what you guys had to do.
Exactly. And if we hadn't built systems that could be relatively easily changed, then it would have been really a problem and very expensive.
Yeah. And so do you remember any other challenges that we have not talked about at that time that you want to talk about?
I think the biggest challenge, well, I think I've hit on the biggest challenges working with somebody who's not inside the company, balancing various internal demands. So you've got one person who thinks this is the most important feature to have, and another person who has a totally different perspective on it. We have a company with three different owners, myself, my wife, and our business partner. So we all have our different ideas about what's the most important thing. So managing all of those different expectations and desires, those are big challenges.
Wow. And given all these challenges, how or even why did you even stay committed to the goal of, you know, systematizing the business, you know, given all the challenges you mentioned?
Yeah, sure. Why didn't you just throw in the towel someday? because we knew we had big aspirations. We knew we wanted to grow the company. We had, a large reason that we do the work we do is because it's really good for the planet, frankly. You know, we're trying to save energy. That's an important goal. I don't care what your politics are. Yeah. You know, saving energy is an important goal. And so that's a big deal to us. And so we knew that in order to grow the company and get where we wanted to go, which we're not there yet, but in order to get where we wanted to go, we had to have systems that were flexible, robust, and could deal with all the volume that we hoped that we would eventually get to. And so we knew we had to, you know, even though it was difficult, early on in the process, there were times when there were certain, very early on, when there were certain people who felt like, you know what, this is too hard. We should go back to pencil and paper, you know, because that was because that was easier. So you had to fight against that and say, listen, stay the course, stay with us. Yes, this is a difficult transition, but we're going to get, you know, this is what we need to do to get where we're going. You had to build a picture, you had to build a vision of what was going to be on the other end of the pain and suffering.
Yeah. And so now we've talked about kind of the steps you took to actually, you know, systematize the business and get it to the point where, you know, I'm trying to figure out at what very point did you now feel the business was systematized and it could, you know, run without you? Do you remember what happened or where specifically did you feel that way?
Well, I think it was a point where we felt comfortable that we could have other staff members taking on the role of running daily operations. And that was, you know, a key. And then we could step out. The systems and the processes were in place at the point where we did not have to be involved in those daily operational management experiences.
Yeah. So here's a question that my listeners like a lot. It's like, you know, imagine your business like kind of a conveyor belt, and one end is maybe a potential builder or whatever that wants, you know, probably thinking of trying to, you know, have you guys work for them, you know, maybe do an energy rating on their building. So on that end of the conveyor belt is that person. And that same person is on the other end of the conveyor belt now is, you know, become a customer, he loves you guys, is raving about you guys and telling the whole world about you guys. Mm-hmm. But in between that, there are, you know, people, systems, and, you know, things behind the scenes making that transformation happen as that person is going through each stage of the conveyor belt. And so I'm just trying to have you give the listeners kind of a behind the scenes of what's happening.
Right. Well, that's a good question and an interesting one because, and I think this is true for a lot of businesses, if if the customer, your client, never knows how much work is going into delivering a great experience for them, mm-hmm. then that's one measure of success, right?
Yeah.
You know, so if it looks easy and seamless to them when it's actually very difficult, great. That's success to a degree. And so we've got all these, so we've got schedulers trying to manage all these moving houses. We've got our field personnel gathering the data and dealing with all the challenges that they have in the field, weather, the job not being ready, the fact that when you're doing quality assurance work, a lot of times you're delivering bad news to people. Hey, I've got to tell you what's wrong here. That's 90% of the work we do is, you know, for better or worse, it's telling people what's wrong with the work that was done.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, all those things. As long as what they see is that the work got done, it got done well, it got done professionally, it got done on time, we didn't hold up their process,
mm-hmm.
that is success. And that's what we're able to do with the systems we have. So
I'm wondering now, kind of just so that the listener has a very concrete way of knowing, what's the difference? I mean, is he saying the different departments? I'm just trying to figure out the different phases of what's happening. So that, that way the person can literally know this is how.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in general, without getting to all the other strange things that we do, the process with our home builders, the beginning of the relationship, we look like a consulting firm.
Okay.
So we talk with them about what their goal, where their houses are. First, we might do some testing. Like, here's where you are now, point A. Where do you want to go? What's point B? Maybe they're at this place and they want to become an Energy Star builder, for example.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of analysis. We use energy modeling tools that tell us how much energy a house uses now and what would it use if you changed X, Y, and Z. So that's what the first part of our relationship with our clients looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part of the relationship, we become inspectors. So we go out, we inspect the work that other contractors, like the insulator and the framer and the heating and cooling guy or girl, do. And so we look at their work, we test their work. And then the third part is reporting. So we ultimately produce a report telling them what went well, and here's what the score is.
Yeah.
And we also hold people accountable. So if something is wrong, if an inspection fails, we won't pass the house through until it passes. So we make them come back and fix it.
Awesome. I like that. I just wanted to give the listener kind of know what the different phases that you put people through, especially when it comes to the energy rating thing for the builders. Yeah. And so we're talking about how the business now is systematized. And I was curious, what specific systems do you have in place that enable the employees to know exactly what they need to do? And so far, we've talked about Dash being the core.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything additional you want to add about the Dash software you build before we talk about other things you have in place?
Sure. We talked a good bit about it. You're right. And as you said, it's the center. We call it the backbone of our business. And that's true. There's a couple things that it's not. And it is not a project management tool. And that's why I brought Asana. We're using Asana to do that. It's also not a CRM. We use Zoho CRM for that. And we've gone, repeatedly addressed the question of, should we build, CRM capacity into, for those who don't know, customer relationship management,
mm-hmm.
capacity into the tool itself. And because those systems are so big, it never made sense to us to build it into our own system when there are other very good tools out there to use. So we use other tools to handle that aspect of our business. Those are the other pieces that we use to manage the company that aren't part of Dash right now.
Okay. That's good to know. And so how do you track the results and verify, how do you track and verify the results being delivered by the employees? I think you mentioned something how Dash produces reports, something like that.
It does. There's a couple of different ways that Dash produces reports. One, we have a set of, canned reports, various things that we set up to run over and over and over again. There's also an ability to run ad hoc reports so that we can pull all different kinds of data out of Dash. We don't right now, as we talked about in the pre-interview, we don't feel like we have the perfect metric for gauging employee performance. Maybe there really isn't such a thing as a perfect metric.
Yeah.
And so when we look at a number of different ones, because it's not just, we're not a factory. We're not producing a product.
Widgets.
We're not producing widgets on a line. And so, if it means that, you know, on a given day, one of our field staff may have to spend extra time working with the builder, working with the contractor because things didn't go well for them. And we need to take that time so that they understand why we failed them on something.
Yeah.
And what, you know, not just that you failed, but literally, why does it matter? What is it going to matter to the ultimate consumer, the home buyer? Why does it matter to them that these things were done right?
Yeah.
And why are we holding them accountable for that? If they need to take the time to do that, we want them to take the time to do that. That's good customer service. That's what's making the change over time, not just, you know, failing people. That's not change. That's just failing people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally understand because, you know, given the nature of the business itself, in essence, you're actually kind of consultants too. It's not necessarily, it's not a widget or software per se, it's consulting. So based on the person you're consulting with who has a different set of issues, the solution or end result might end up being different. So it's knowing how to work your way around that.
Yeah, exactly. So inspectors, consultants, and educators in essence, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so now the business is at the point where it runs without you. And, you know, I want to get some insight as to, you know, which areas of the business you focus on the most now and why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for a while now, I've been able to put my time and attention and energy into some of the bigger things for the company, the strategic issues and initiatives. One of the big things that we've done, we launched at the end of the beginning of last year. So it's relatively new, is that we formed a collaborative of other like-minded companies across the country, one per major market. And there's three things that the collaborative is doing, and that's working on exactly what we're talking about, our common business problems and opportunities and processes.
Yeah.
And then the opportunities that are there in front of us as a group to work with different clients. And then it's also a place for us to do innovation incubation, which is something that I'm very excited about. We're still working on how to do that. But the ability as a group of small companies to maybe to do bigger things than we would otherwise be able to do on our own. So that's one thing. But that's what I get to spend my time on, is big strategic things, initiatives. I try to pull the team together from my company, potentially people from outside and some members from the other collaborators, so that we can drive things forward and do big things.
And one thing I noticed so far based on this interview with you is that even when you even build the technology that would make you stand out from the competition, I see that you are even willing to share it with people who are necessarily competitors. And now that you are running the business where it runs without you, you're actually now still working with people who would be considered competitors. Why? I'm just curious. I mean, I'm trying to start the reasoning behind that.
Well, it's a really good question. And I guess probably a little bit personality, and I guess part of it's longevity in the industry. Again, in an industry in which a lot of people are in it because they have a bigger mission in mind, saving energy. It's a big mission. And so I've got a lot of, you know, it may sound like a simple thing, but I've got a lot of really good friends that I have a lot of respect for. And ultimately, to me, it was more interesting and exciting to find a way to work with these people that I like and respect than to just go out and compete with them head to head in every market across the country. Does that mean that ultimately perhaps Energy Logic is a smaller company than it would otherwise be? Maybe. But maybe there's more fulfillment for myself and my staff in working with other people than just trying to go out and crush them under heel.
Could it also be that because of the fact that the industry itself is a new industry that's growing, so by the fact of you going out and helping others who have the same mindset and also in this industry, helping them be more successful, basically get the industry more matured and growing up more and more exposed to other people who might have interest in using the services of people in this industry? I'm just trying to understand, is that kind of like the altruistic goal?
I wouldn't call it altruism because we're definitely trying to grow all these business and you know, make more money, but make more money doing good. But yes, because it's a young, you know, relatively small industry, there's a ton of opportunity for professionalism. And if we professionalize a core group of really good companies in the industry, it probably benefits everybody because they'll have to keep up. You know, and it benefits us because, you know, it's like this. If you're training to run a race and you run with people who are slower than you, They're not going to push you, right?
Yeah.
But if you run with somebody who's as fast as you are, or maybe even better, just a little bit faster,
yeah,
then you've got to run better. You've got to get faster yourself. And that's a little bit of that collaborative, collaborative yet competitive spirit that we're trying to build in this collaborative event.
So basically the rising tides raises all boats.
Yeah. And there's this is, again, it's relatively new in the grand scheme of things. And there's a ton of work to do. We've got a long way to go in this country with, reducing energy and houses. So there's no end to, we're nowhere near the finish line in terms of what we can do with this industry.
Yeah. So what's the next stage of growth for your business, and what plans do you have to achieve next and why?
Yeah. So one of the big things that we're doing at Energy Logic is that we're embarking on an employee stock ownership plan, an ESOP.
Wow.
So that's a big deal for us. It's a big deal for any company that does it. We're just starting out on the long process of selling the company to the employees. And that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. It's really complicated. It's a lot of work. And some days it's kind of scary, but it's really good. And we're really happy to be doing it. It's very, very consistent with our values and who we are. So
why are you doing that? I'm just curious too, because I'd like to know about that.
Well, there are a number of ways you can exit a company.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, we would really, how to put it, we really have a ton of respect and a lot of admiration for the people who work for us.
Yeah.
And we feel really blessed that they do. And they're really good people. And, I don't need the whole pie. I'm happy to have my slice of it. So,
yeah.
So it's just very consistent with who we are as owners, that this is the way we want to go and exit it.
And yeah. I can even see that as also very beneficial too, because instead of waiting all the way to go probably IPO or all the way to try and sell it to somebody else, but then you sell it to somebody else, the person comes in with their own culture and everything. Sometimes that leaves the employees you have in there all disenfranchised.
Yeah, absolutely. So very early on, we made the mistake in the inverse of talking about the company as a family.
Yeah,
but we don't talk about that way. We talk about a team now. A family is a different thing, right? You don't leave your family. You can't get out of your family.
You can't sell your family, huh?
Right. But teams can change and morph and grow over time, mm-hmm. and people can come and go.
Yeah.
And so the team is a much better metaphor for us.
Yeah.
And that's all part of who we are. Yeah.
So in summary, just try to give a summary of what the steps you've taken so far to get to this point where the business is systematized, so the listener can just know what to do next. What will you say are the key things the listener has to, have in mind in summary?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of people who will say this, and somebody I didn't mention when you were asking about influences, Seth Godin,
mm-hmm.
that's, incredibly famous blogger and thinker. And, and he's one of the things that he says repeatedly, and other people say this too, is that, you've got to know where you want to go. And I think not just you have to know it, you have to write it down. So you're going to say, here's where we are and here's where we go, and write this down and then start working backwards from there, devising a plan for how you're going to get to that point. I think especially in America, we often make the mistake of not having a long enough time horizon. So if it's going to take you 5 years to get to where you want to be, put together a 5-year plan. Yes, it's going to change. The only thing right, is that it won't be the way you lay it out on paper. But if you don't do that, I just don't think you can get there. If you lay out that plan, look where the holes are, look where the obstacles are, look at yourself as a business owner,
mm-hmm.
and what are your strengths and weaknesses? Yes. I mean, it's very obvious stuff, right? But I know what I'm good at now. It took a while to figure that out. And I've hired people who are good at things I'm not good at. And so I think that's another key piece. But all those things matter. Just put together a plan, figure out where the holes are, figure out where you need help, and then stay with that plan. That's to me the key.
Stay focused. And so what would you say is the very next step for the person who's been listening to this interview all the way to this point to take in order to get started with transforming their business so it runs successfully without their constant involvement?
Well, if on the assumption that people who are listening to this, are interested in that because they sense that they don't have that,
mm-hmm.
right, then, you map out what, if you don't have processes in place already, you systematize the process, right? So you've got to determine what your process is. And then a lot of times, we still struggle with this,
mm-hmm.
is do we have two people doing the same job in two different ways? And, you know, we have this internal debate all the time. And I'll say, like, we have 15 field people. I'll say, I don't believe there can be 15 best ways of doing things. I will entertain the notion that there may be two or three that are roughly equal, but there can't be 15 best ways. So what are the best ways, the best practices for you, for your business to get its work done, and then make sure that everybody starts to align on those things and that everybody's in agreement? That takes leadership. You've got to get everybody on the same sheet of music about what you're doing, how you're going to do it, why it matters that everybody does it the same way, roughly speaking. So you can get, then you can systematize what you've done. Yeah. And then you can start to get your head above water as the business owner to do the other things that you need to do to grow the company.
Awesome. And so I'm always curious, you know, to know, is there a question that you were wishing that I would have asked you during this interview that I didn't ask you? And if so, you know, you can pose the question and the answer.
Well, that's a great question in itself. You're a really good interviewer, and I think this.
Now I got to put my head back together. So
I think it's always fun to think about these things, and most of the time now I get asked about what the future holds and not so much what the past held. And that's always good. So I don't really have a question that I wish you'd asked. I'm sorry.
No problem. And so what would you say the best way for the listener to connect with you and thank you for doing the interview?
Mail, possibly through LinkedIn. You know, I'm out there on LinkedIn. That'd be great.
Awesome. And so now I'm speaking to you, the listener. So far, you've listened to this interview. Obviously, you're listening all the way to this point. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, I want you to, you know, feel free to subscribe to the interview because we have a link on iTunes, which is you can get to the link to subscribe. It's going to by going to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. That way, you can subscribe, and every time we have a new podcast, literally will come to your phone and you'll know about it. And if you don't have an iPhone, you can subscribe on if you have an Android device by going to sweetprocess.com/Stitcher, and that way you can download the Android app. And if you know someone else who you feel will find this interview beneficial, I want you to share with them so that they can check out this interview and get value from it as well. And finally, if you're at that point in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck and you literally want to get things out of your head, document step-by-step procedures so your employees know what you know and actually can carry out tasks and execute just the way you want them to, well, sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. Steve, thanks for doing the interview.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And we're done.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.